Yo, yo, yo.
I mean, you're terrible at basketball.
Chandler Parsons is 6'9 swinging and he can shoot the three.
Hello and welcome to the Alligator Sports Podcast. We're doing a special Monday edition here because we have a bunch of topics to talk about. We've got a different group from last time, so let's go around and introduce ourselves. I'm Adam Berry, the assistant sports editor and softball beat writer for Alligator Sports.
Kyle Maestri, baseball beat writer.
Basketball beat writer, Mike Ferdinando.
What's up, Alligator Nation? Phil Kegler, football writer, columnist.
Christopher Yazbek, women's basketball beat writer.
All right, and we brought you guys in here tonight because there was a big women's basketball game today. Chris, explain what happened.
Well, basically, Florida, number 11, higher ranked than Tennessee for the first time ever, knocked off the Volunteers at home. Shea Brooks was unbelievable with 29 points, and Pat Summitt won game after her 1,000th win, couldn't come down to Gainesville and pick up her 1,001st win. Florida had the second largest crowd in school history with 8,060. And basically, the Gators willed themselves to a victory. They were overmatched at every position. And that was that.
Well, the first largest crowd came a couple of years back when they gave away a free ice cream promotion. So just throwing that out there for you listeners.
Does anybody know where that ranks with men's attendance this year?
I have no idea. No. I'm sure it's behind.
I bet that every game. Behind almost every game?
Yeah, absolutely. So.
Okay, because we're going off of, like, ticket sales and not.
Yeah, well, right. We always have to go with their announced number.
You got to count the 8,000. Swipe that. Even nobody.
So, since the three of you were there, did it look more full than a lot of the men's games this year, or no?
It was more full on the lower levels, but the upper level was clearly, you know, empty.
Yeah, it was packed. It looked good on TV, probably. It was packed from the bottom.
Yeah, and, like, there was more Florida fans, but a big factor in this is also that a lot of Tennessee fans come out. They travel pretty well. Like, women's basketball fans, if such things exist, like, in Gainesville, will come out just see Tennessee play. Tennessee draws well almost everywhere they go.
I couldn't believe how many Tennessee fans were there. It was maybe a quarter Tennessee fans, maybe more.
Yeah, the odd thing, too, like, the section right behind Tennessee's bench was all mostly Tennessee orange. And even though, like, I don't know, I'd say the percentage was 65 Florida, 35 Tennessee. Yeah. But the Tennessee fans were very much louder, like, by and far. Like, at times you would have thought that it was, like, 90% Tennessee because they just cheered so much louder.
Yeah, as loud as the Gator fans were, I mean, Tennessee fans were really loud. They, you know, clearly they love women's basketball.
Love those Lady Balls.
With Lady Balls. All right, let's talk about why this was such a big deal. I mean, the women's basketball team this year is unreal. Chris, explain how their season's gone so far.
They were 9-22 2 years ago. Amanda Butler came in and changed everything around. I mean, go to the NIT last year, third round, and now all of a sudden, you know, they're 22-2, first place in the SEC, 8-1. Nobody saw it coming. And to knock off Tennessee, you know, Tennessee's got, you know, a young team, but still to beat the Lady Balls, you know, it says a lot about where your program is at right now.
Yeah, I don't know if we've said that this was only the third win Florida's ever had against them.
Yeah, in 40 tries.
In 40 tries, right. But I think it's just remarkable that, you know, as I was saying to DeFernando earlier, it just seems like athletic director Jeremy Foley's just done it again. I mean, he just picks.
He just keeps picking winners.
A young coach that, you know, maybe nobody really has their eye on. And, you know, now all of a sudden, you know, they're going to be top three, top four seed in the NCAA tournament. You know, and obviously this team's very senior-driven. You know, Shea and Marche will leave after this season. But, you know, there's only good things to come for the Florida women's basketball.
What's working so well for this team right now? Why is this team so much better than they
have? All I can point to is Amanda Butler. I mean, there's no big changes. I mean, Shea and Marche were here 2 years ago. They were on that 9-22 team. There's a few factors. They have a new junior transfer, Steffi Sorensen. A big outside shooting threat. She had a big three-pointer with a couple minutes left in the game today to give them a five-point lead, actually, and kind of put the game on ice a little bit. But really, it's just Coach Butler getting them buying in effort-wise. Pat Summitt said after the game that she felt like Florida never gives up on a possession. They're in every possession, and she felt that her team didn't even do that today.
You know, you look at the way Amanda Butler played, you know, when she was here at UF, she was just, you know, the stingiest defensive player, physical, you know, attacked other teams. And basically, she's brought that to this team. I mean, the way they're playing defensively, they hold Tennessee to 57 points. It was their lowest, you know, total that Tennessee's ever scored against them. So the way they're playing physically and, you know, just matching up with other teams.
Yeah. I got two questions for Phil and Chris, who, you know, have been around the team more than us. But, is Shea Brooks the Nick Calathis of the women's team, or is that not a fair comparison? Do you think there's more to work with there for her? Because it seems like she carries them just as often. And the second thing is, none of us probably know, like, too much UF women's basketball history, but where does this rank if we had to guess with the biggest wins? Because I'd have to think it's, like, top five for sure.
Yeah, I mean, I definitely say it's probably top five at least, you know, given the, you know, UF was ranked number 11, you know. And also on Shea Brooks, I think it's fair to compare her to Nick Lathis, you know, for the team that she's playing on, you know, pretty much a balanced scoring team. But when she needs to take over, she can take over and win a game. And that's basically what she did against Tennessee today.
Yeah, I mean, she always plays very well against Tennessee because she grew up in Jackson, Tennessee, and has said that, you know, every girl grows up wanting to play for Tennessee. You know, obviously she didn't come out of high school very highly recruited. Came to Florida, and now four out of the five times she's played Tennessee, she's had 20 points or more. She plays great against them. She can take over a game. Today she had 12 points in a row for Florida. Like, it was just her for, like, a five-minute span, all Florida points with Shea. As far as where this game ranks, yeah, I mean, it has to rank pretty high when it's only the third time they've beaten Tennessee. And I think this was even a more crucial victory because it was a game they were supposed to win. Tennessee was coming in. ESPN2 is broadcasting the game. You know, maybe a lot of people had heard about Florida. Maybe they hadn't seen them play. But beating Tennessee, even when it's maybe a down year for Tennessee, it still means a lot in this game.
What's this team's ceiling? I mean, have we seen a women's team like this recently here at UF?
You know, I think, you know, this team can go pretty deep in the NCAA tournament. I think they can, you know, get as high as a 2-seed probably. And, you know, it's just a matter of, you know, in the NCAA tournament, anything can happen, you know. Good guard play. Obviously, they have Shea Brooks and, you know, Lenika Thompson and, you know, Tremaine Lucas, the freshman who stepped up. So, you know, if they can continue to just keep playing the way they've been playing, then sure they can go maybe even Final Four.
Yeah, I mean, the good thing about this team is its depth. It will do well in the SEC tournament environment where you have to play day after day. I mean, they'll likely have a bye on day one. I'll be curious to see how, if they do end up meeting Auburn again, how they fare against them in the SEC tournament. I mean, this team seems like it does well. I don't know how it matches up against a whole bunch of the teams. I mean, they have – this is their fourth win over a ranked team, so.
If you want to talk about Amanda Butler coming full circle, she told us a story in the press conference after the game about growing up in Tennessee as a Tennessee fan and actually going to Pat Summitt basketball camp when she was 15. So, you know, this is a big win for her.
All right, we got anything about Whoops? Anything else about women's basketball?
What was the comment you made before, Deeper? You think Summit could or couldn't coach men?
Well, this is a completely different conversation. She couldn't coach men.
She could not coach men. Why
not
do you think that?
Not because she's not talented enough to do so, but, I mean, I just don't think that 18- to 22-year-old guys are going to necessarily respect a woman coach.
So you're just going pure sexism.
I mean,
for the reason why.
Do you think I'm wrong?
I don't know. I'm just curious. Is that the only? That's the only reason.
I think you're gonna have a hard time. I think it'd be a circus if you try to do it. First of all the media attention.
I mean, the thing is, I don't think we'll ever really get to see this experiment because she's pretty much said she doesn't want to. I mean, she basically is the face of women's basketball. I mean, just to show how ridiculous her 1,000th win is, Florida as a program only played its 1,000th game like 2 weeks ago. Like, this is only their, like, 1,005th game or something. So, I think she's just happy being who she is.
You know, she clearly is a great basketball coach, for one. So, men or women, she can coach basketball. It's just a matter of, you know, getting the players' respect and, you know, whether they'll listen to what you say, I guess.
All right, Mike, I have a question for you. You were at the game tonight, and you've covered every men's game so far. What was this crowd like compared to the men's crowds that we talked about last show?
It was exciting down the end when they won. The people were going nuts. They actually had to warn fans not to storm the court, which I was kind of surprised, but they did. No one stormed the court. So
yeah, I don't know who's going to.
It was
6-year-old.
I mean, this is the biggest one in that school's in this program's history. So it was a good crowd. Yeah.
All right, we ready to move on?
Yeah, that's fine.
All right. Well, as the softball beat writer, I spent this weekend with Stacey Nelson and the gang at KDC Shoal Presley Stadium. They opened up their season going 2-1, falling to Baylor today in a 1-0 loss. Kyle, what do you think about this team?
I think that the offense is obviously not in midseason form yet. I mean, they should have won. They should have swept them, got out of there with 3 wins. At the same time, the biggest thing I took away from it was that going 2-for-3 in a 3-game series is a failure at this point, which is kind of scary. Like, I don't know if those expectations are fair or not fair, but it seemed like they lost this weekend. Not like the weekend as a whole was a failure instead of a success, which I think is a really interesting
viewpoint.
I mean, that's the feeling you got from the fans and the players as well, except for Stacey, who was happy, you know, just to have played.
Yeah. Yeah, I think it's just, that's just the overall feeling with this team. I mean, certainly Coach Walton was not happy, I'm sure, with the loss. So,
I made the argument that I feel like this takes the weight off their shoulders, though. Like, I mean, we ran a rap about them, like a huge deal for a softball team. I mean, this has got to lessen the pressure on them, right?
I think it puts more pressure on the hitters. I don't think they put too much pressure on themselves anyway, as far as, like, outside expectations from being around the team. They don't really seem to care, like, what they're supposed to do as long as they feel like they're playing well and they're together. It's just a really great team atmosphere there. But as the hitters, I mean, the last year they lost 5 games. They were all by 1 run. And 3 of them were 1-0 shutouts. The other 2 were 3-2 to Louisiana Lafayette at the College World Series and 2-1 to Long Beach State. So, I mean, all those games were well-pitched games and the offense just didn't come through. And I think eventually they're going to put enough pressure on themselves to, you know, get it done for their pitching staff.
Walton mentioned that actually after today's game. He said last year this team might have won those games, but I mean the games they did lose last year were similar to this. You're talking about the hitters though. Who's going to emerge from this lineup?
I don't know. I mean, I think Allie Gardner had a down
down series, yeah.
Yeah, I mean she got a hit in the second game, but she usually hits good pitching, so it's weird for her to go hitless in 2 of the games. Really any of them, nobody I don't think played as well as they could. Francesca had a pretty decent weekend, which is surprising because, you know, she's the one you thought might struggle heading in. Kim get a bunt base hit this whole weekend?
I don't know if she got a bunt. She got a hit this.
She hit a home
today.
Run.
Yeah, she hit the home run and then she got a hit base today. Hit today. The first hit of the game.
It's really weird for Kim to go 3 games without getting a bunting for a hit. So I think the whole offense just looked not up to par for the weekend, but it'll come around probably as they get more at-bats.
All right, and the pitching is obviously there. Both Nelson and Brombacher were great this weekend. I mean, did you see any of that?
Yeah, I mean, Stacey is, you know, going to do the same thing every time out. And Stephanie, I feel like she's a really great pitcher. She has a lot of potential, and this is nothing against her because I think she could end up being really good. She's pretty untested, I think, even this being her sophomore year. She always matches up with the second-day pitcher. So she always gets tons of run support. She rarely has to go 7 innings, which last year, this is regular season numbers, including the regionals. So before the College World Series, she made 28 appearances, and only 5 times she had to pitch 7 or more innings, which is remarkable. Like, compare that against Stacey. She had 54 appearances, and only 20 times she didn't have to go 7 or more, and probably half of those were relief appearances. So, I mean, whenever Stacey's out there, she's matching up with the best pitcher, and it puts, you know, it's way harder for them to win, I think, those games.
Which is, I mean, that's exactly what happened today against Whitney Canyon. You did some research about her.
Yeah, right? I went and looked up Canyon because I thought it was a little startling that they couldn't scratch out any runs. And she was the Texas Gatorade Player of the Year last year, her senior year in high school. She was 31-0, and she had a .07 ERA. I don't know how that's possible to have .07 ERA, but those were her stats last season. And Baylor was predicted to go 6th in the Big 12, finish 6th. I'd say they were going to finish 3rd, probably behind Oklahoma and Texas A&M. I mean, with that pitching, you only need one pitcher in softball, and she seems to be it. She was very impressive.
And this team's 2 years removed from the Women's College World Series, I believe. So a lot of those players have been there. Like, they're a good team.
Yeah, I think Baylor's a decent, you know, women's program, women's softball program. So I would not be surprised if Canyon takes them deep into the postseason.
All right, we talked about somebody who's going to emerge earlier, but I know you have one player you want to talk about who is already producing well.
Yeah, well, I think Asia Pakulba oftentimes gets lost in the shuffle. They have so many All-American hitters, and Asia's just a sophomore, but for my money, she has the best swing on the team. I couldn't have been more impressed with her in the second game of the series, where she hit a home run to the opposite field and a double to the opposite field, which, you know, if you grew up around baseball or softball, you know, as a hitter, if you can shoot the gaps and hit for power in the opposite field, it's about the most impressive thing you can do. So I think she oftentimes gets overlooked, but she might be the best hitter on the team when it's all said and done, go down as the best hitter in the program's history.
Well, the question I have is that we're 1 weekend into the softball season already. We already have 1 loss. When are we going to revisit the over and under 5 losses for the season?
Did anyone go under? Who went under in that conversation?
Well, me, who actually made an educated guess, and Mike McCall, who's just an idiot. So
McCall just did it because.
But when a question I had that I don't remember, when did their first loss come last year? Wasn't it deep into the season?
19 in a row. Wow. They started off last season, and they lost to Long Beach State, which was 2-1, and it was in California, mm-hmm. so it was a road game for them. Mm-hmm. So, yeah, I mean, and then this came third
right.
game of the season, which is a little
bit. If I remember right, that Long Beach State was even, like, a contested game.
Yeah, it was 1-1 until, like, the 10th.
Yeah.
And Asia made a throw to first that pulled Gardner off the bag that Walton wasn't too happy about. That scored the winning run. So, yeah, that was a dicey game, I guess.
So, Phil, do you want to change yours to more than 5 losses?
No, I mean, I'll stick with under. I think getting that first loss early. You know, I'm always one to stick by my convictions. I don't like to waver. I like to make decisions. I don't like being decisive. I like to commit to a point and stick by it. So I'll stick with under. Maybe getting a loss out of the way, if there is such a thing, you know, can help them later on.
Chris, you weren't here last week, but what do you think about over-under, their loss total from last season?
I'm
going
to go
over
because I don't think they really, you know, I mean, of course, you want to try to win every game, but I don't think it matters if they go 70-5 again. You know, once they get a conference play and then they get a postseason play, that's really all they're thinking about. You know, they just remember losing that Women's College World Series semifinal game. They want to get back to that point and win it this time.
Yeah. And I think they're going to be able to definitely get back on track because their next 6 games are against not great teams, mm-hmm. to be honest. The only team that they play that's pretty good in that stretch is Georgia Tech, where Kristen Atkins, who played on the team last year, transferred. I found that out today, and she's their number 2 pitcher. So I think Georgia Tech maybe could give them some problems, but I think they won't be tested until 7 games from now when they have to go to California and they play teams like Fresno and Arizona State.
Yeah, and that's a pretty solid tournament field. Anything else on softball? Anybody?
Do you guys catch any of the games this weekend or any? Did you keep up with it?
Yeah, I went to the Friday night game. You know,
did.
And it looked like, you know, like you said, the offense wasn't in midseason form, mm-hmm. but I got a lot of work to do.
The crowd at the softball game was huge, by the way.
That's
really?
Right. There were 1,600. Yeah, 1,600 people there Saturday.
I was not one of those lucky 1,600, unfortunately.
All right, so we got nothing else on softball. Mike, you're going to Kentucky Tuesday, right?
Yes, we are.
What are you looking forward to in that game?
Well, Florida's next really big test of the season. They can get a win at Kentucky. That'll go a long way in building the resume for the tournament. All right, Phil.
Wildcats will win next.
They do have to deal with Patrick Patterson, who's one of the best big guys in the SEC, maybe the country. So, see how Alex Tyus stacks up with him.
Well, he's a hot shot this week.
are we going to get into the hot shots? Because there's great dispute over the hot shots.
Before we get into that, I want to ask Phil, why are you so adamant that they will lose to Kentucky? Yeah. Do you think Kentucky's that good, or do you think they can't play on the road? Like, what?
I mean, well, see, I just remember this game, this team Florida, they went to Knoxville, they played this Tennessee average, a little bit above average team. I believe they lost by, well, I don't know how many they ended up losing by, they were trailing by 20-plus points. I don't know.
Tennessee is a better team than Kentucky is. They have more losses, but they're a better team. They played better teams.
Honestly, we'll see.
So
I wish we could have you on.
What's your think? So that didn't explain anything for you. So they had one bad game. Is it because it's on the road to a pretty good team?
This team's not consistent enough for me to call them good. So, in the conference, I have Florida. I don't know what the records are. I don't really care what the records are. I have Florida after Tennessee.
Looks at those anyway, right? So
stats aren't always indicative.
Oh, I'll just say that in the Tennessee game, when Calathes picked up 2 fouls in the first 2.5 minutes, that did kind of affect the rest of the game. I mean, you can't say that's not going to happen this time, but, you know, that did change the game.
Definitely.
I think Kentucky's a tough game, but it's definitely a winnable game for Florida. Kentucky's got Jody Meeks, Patrick Patterson, and not a whole lot else. So if they can take care of those two guys, they have a chance.
And as we discussed,
Jody Meeks, 20 points.
Over.
That's over in a win or a loss,
yeah.
I think. So.
Over 25.
Still over. I mean, most of Kentucky's offense consists of him just jacking
over
up 50. Threes.
Wasn't that what Florida's is as well, most of
sure.
as we discussed last week?
Sure, but that's everyone jacking up 3.
Especially
Tennessee's, oh, come on. All
right, I got something about basketball here that I've been noticing lately, especially in the SEC, is that I didn't used to think home court advantage counted for anything because I didn't think the crowds were big enough in college basketball to make a difference, but if you look at the SEC, like, weird stuff happens with I feel like most teams are on a fairly even talent level, and when they go on the road, bad things seem to happen. Tennessee just lost to Auburn on the road. And Phil, I don't know if you, you know, how closely you actually follow SEC basketball, but I think we can agree Auburn's way below, you know, level of Florida.
I'm all over, man. I know results.
So I think really just the going on the road is always tough, and that's really what this boils down to. I don't think Tennessee or Kentucky is that much more talented than Florida. I think they'll probably split. You know, they'll both win at home.
I mean, yeah, I think you pointed to the right thing when you say, like, everybody's just kind of in the same range of talent. I mean, some teams are better. You know, Auburn's probably one of the lesser teams. But, yeah, when you're so jumbled together, then a lot of the home team's going to have the advantage.
I think they say in college basketball, it's the greatest home court advantage. Like, two-thirds of the time, the home team wins. So, in college basketball, home
so court. So, maybe. Do you guys get the impression that college football is much bigger advantage? I feel like college football, the advantage is twice as whatever it is in college basketball, but maybe not. I don't know.
There's 80,000 drunk fans.
Right.
That's a bigger advantage.
All right, do we have anything else on hoops? Do you want to open up the hot shots debate?
We're going to talk about the hot shots. Go for it. All right, well, we've narrowed it down to Calathes, Tyus, and Irving Walker.
Personally,
not necessarily in that order.
Let's get that down.
Phil's trying to make amends with Chandler Parsons by voting him.
And the man had 10 rebounds, double-double.
You had a run-in with him outside the practice facility. Didn't you?
No run-ins. He held the door for me.
Since they had a big win, I feel like you could throw maybe five guys on the list. Because I was thinking about, could Hodge get a third place vote?
He made the big shots.
So
he made the free throws.
Yeah.
He
did. Four down the stretch.
After missing two. And scared everybody to
I mean, I wanted to give Devin Downey hot shots. I mean, that wasn't legal.
Can we say enough about Devin Downey? 11 points in the final minute of the game. That was incredible.
One of the better late game performances I'd like watched live.
Guy's unbelievable.
Who's better, Devin Downey or Nick Calathes?
As an overall player?
Yeah, who would you rather have on your team?
I still think Calathes is a better overall player. He can do a little more. He can create more.
It's really hard for me. I haven't seen, and that just might be not me not watching enough, I haven't seen enough of Nick in really late game situations. Like, I've seen Downey. I know he hit a game winner earlier in the year in the SEC and did this against Florida. So if they're equal, then obviously I want the guy who's better late. But, I mean, Nick's very good.
Yeah, I mean, Downey can be a streaky player at times, but I guess so can Calathes. So, you know, it could go either way in that.
Yeah, McCall, I think, was trying to argue that Downey is putting up the same numbers Calathes is. That's not true at all. I think Calathes just does more things for you and more aspects of the game. But I actually do think Downey is incredible late in games. Like, he beat Kentucky with the last-second shot. He led the comeback against UF, although it didn't finish him off in South Carolina. And then, again, you know, this most recent game. So I think he's one of the best closers right now in college basketball.
Sure.
All right, so Tyus, Calathes, and Walker with Phil's vote for Parsons thrown in there somewhere.
I went Tyus first because I feel like he kind of established a little bit of an inside game for them that game. He scored close to 20, had 7 rebounds, I think. Mm-hmm. Then I went Calathes because, you know, 22, 6, and 5, whatever stat line was, he was doing it all as usual. And I'm going to change my vote, which is going to, like, send Defer into a panic over here, but I'm going to go Hodge third for icing it late, and I'm leaving Walker off my ballot.
Wow.
Leaving Irving Walker off your ballot is unexcusable. I can't even fathom. My ballot was Irving Walker 1. He had a career-high 18 points. He made several big threes towards the end of the game that helped save that game for Florida.
Does he pay you to say good things?
Career-high. He's a good player, Phil.
Career-high is a negligible point because if Eloy Vargas scores 7 tomorrow, I'm not putting him on my hot shots.
Vargas' career-high would actually be 3, but...
I mean, I think Walter Hodge, as Kyle said, like, we probably kind of all left him off a little bit just because it's been maybe... For me, it was, you know, it's been like 5 days since the game, like... I seen those free throws, like, I firmly thought they were going to lose that game still.
Yeah, I think there's certainly, like, a chance of that he ultimately put to rest, so.
Okay, well, regardless of how, he wasn't on the ballot. I went Irving 1, I went Alex Tyus 2, Kyle was right, he controlled the pain, he kept them alive down low, got lots of rebounds, and Calathes with 22 points.
So.
I went Calathes 1, Tyus 2, Parsons 3. Don't think you can underestimate Parsons coming out with 10 rebounds, 14 points. But, I mean, to me, Nick runs the show, 22 points, 6-5. You know.
Making amends there, Phil.
What?
Making amends with Chandler.
Huh? I just tell it like it is, man. I tell you the truth. Right?
What did you see out of Chandler this game that led you to put him above Irving?
I believe you referred to him as a joke in the last podcast.
I'm not sure. I called him as a joke. I think he's not consistent enough as a number 2 scorer for this team to be really good. That's what I actually said.
All right, Chris, I don't know if you get a vote, but who would you say? Calathes, Tyus, Walker.
All right, I'll kind of make a medium of this. I'll say Calathes, Tyus, and Irving Walker.
All right, there you go. Everybody's accounted for.
I think Parsons in front of Walker is very questionable. Or Hodge. I feel like Parsons was...
Well, yeah.
You're throwing away 18 points?
Oh, you're talking... No, I'm saying Parsons shouldn't be in front of Walker.
Oh, yeah, yeah, okay.
Yeah, to me, that's unquestionable. But the Hodge thing, yeah, the free throws. We'll put four on the list this week.
Read about it.
All right, anything else? Anybody? Parting shots?
What's going on this weekend, or this week, I should say?
Well, women's hoops actually has a pretty big week. They got to go to Vanderbilt, to LSU. A sweep of those games, I'm pretty sure Amanda Butler would dance for joy. Like, they're two very tough places to play. Vanderbilt was the pick to win the SEC this year. So they got big games coming up.
It's the one thing that really they haven't done yet is won a big game on the road. You know, they've beaten the teams they're supposed to beat on the road, but, you know, they're supposed to beat Tennessee at home. You got to win a big game on the road, so we'll see what they do at Vanderbilt.
All right, so before you go to Kentucky coming up here, are you saying that it's going to be a better – are you going to be more impressed with Rupp than you were with Thompson Bowling? Or what do you think going in, and then we're going to get your opinion coming out?
I have extremely lofty expectations what I think Rupp is going to be. So I think it'll be better than Thompson Bowling, but I'm holding judgment.
That would be like heaven, right? Because I don't think anything's better than Thompson Bowling.
You weren't there, man. It was great.
I'm just going by how you described it.
You're comparing it to Florida, though. Come on.
I was just comparing to what you said about
Thompson Bowling was great. I expect Rupp to be great, too.
Are we talking about buildings and, like, arena structures?
We're talking about the atmosphere inside those structures, my friend.
Well, what's a better rivalry for UF right now, Tennessee or Kentucky?
I think it's very close. I think I'm going to go Tennessee right now with the way they've lost games to them recently.
I think it used to be Kentucky because there's that big stigma that Florida couldn't beat Kentucky. I think now that they started doing that, Kentucky, while still good, hasn't been the power that they were kind of in the past. I guess I'd go Tennessee, yeah.
I'd still say Kentucky is the, you know, U.S. big rival no matter what. I mean, you're going to see students camping out for Kentucky, not for Tennessee. So,
what about as a program, or an entire school? I think Tennessee is better at this point because they compete on the football field.
Yeah.
The women's basketball team's good. So I feel like Tennessee, and then with Lane Kiffin throwing fuel on the fire, you got to give it to Tennessee lately as far as who people in Gainesville are hating. So.
And Bruce Pearl's done a lot for that program, for that rivalry between Florida and Tennessee. So
mostly for the Gators fans who still chant Sweaty Bruce at Tennessee games. So.
Bruce Pearl's a great coach.
I also wanted to say I was browsing whatever sports sites I was doing today. And, you know, the last couple of years, I think Florida and Ohio State have been, like, good all-sports schools. What do we think about Oklahoma kind of getting into that talk? Because, you know, they just finished second in football. They have the number two team in women's basketball. I don't know where they're ranked in men's basketball, but it's top five for
decent-ish,
sure.
Yeah.
So I think they've kind of slid into that all sports conversation with Florida, Ohio State, and schools like that.
Yeah, I mean, I definitely probably agree. I mean, I think kind of it's just there's just a shadow. Like, I mean, it's the Big 12. I mean, it's a very big conference, but I don't think people pay as much attention to it as perhaps they should. Because as you just pointed out, I don't think people knew the stats that you just said. I don't think they realized that how well Oklahoma was doing.
Softball
teams board.
Ranked in the top 10 too.
I mean, and on that sense, a lot of props got to be given to UConn if they could ever really turn around their football program. They've got number one in the men's and women's hoops bowl. You know.
Do you think they're going to win both?
The men's is such a crapshoot. I think the women's team could win all six tournament games by 20 points.
Really?
Just not even going to be close?
I mean, I don't know what their closest game has been, but I remember they beat UNC by 30 points in Chapel Hill when UNC was number two. So I don't know who's going to beat them.
As long as we're talking tournament, Kyle, are you still going to give me North? You're going to take North Carolina and give me the feel?
I would still... if I was betting on a team right now, I would still bet on North Carolina to win the whole thing. And I would probably take North Carolina versus the field.
If you're giving the field, you're insane.
Who do you like out there?
I still think Tourney Time.
I think there's four or five teams that can beat them. I think Connecticut can beat them. I think Louisville's good enough to beat them.
I just think day in and day out, I'm in Tourney Time, I'm going to take UNC over Louisville. I'm even going to take UNC over UConn right now. I mean, I have a hard time ever saying UNC versus the field because, you know, I mean, there was people, and I don't know if Kyle's not necessarily one of them, that were saying UNC was going to go undefeated the regular season, which is absurd.
I think we got close to that conversation, didn't we?
I said that it was possible for them to go undefeated. I thought it was possible at the beginning of the year for them to go undefeated. I didn't say that they would. I just said that there was a chance that it could happen.
They're Wake Forest, and Wake Forest beat them already.
Wake Forest is going through some problems right now. I don't think there's a bigger Wake Forest supporter out there than me.
They're
struggling mightily.
You know who's struggling? Georgetown and Notre Dame. They're just sliding out of the tournament. But
The Big East is really tough. I don't know. I think they get – it'd be funny if they got eight teams in and neither of which – like Georgetown and Notre Dame didn't make that
right.
list.
Well, I mean, I don't know. What's Georgetown Big East record? It's like 4-7 or something. It's absurd.
Big Fine tell me the argument that the eighth best team in the Big East could win the SEC during the Florida-Tennessee game. I think that's probably accurate.
I think they'd be in a run for it. I don't know if they outright win it, but I think definitely a run.
Yeah, I mean, I think they could compete in the SEC tournament. I don't think they'd win the regular season because who are you looking at? A, like Providence or somebody like that?
Probably, yeah.
Cincinnati? I think it'd be like Providence, Cincinnati, teams like that. I think they're worse than Tennessee, Florida, Kentucky, just barely. I think they could win the SEC tournament. If Georgia could win the SEC tournament last year, I mean, anyone can win the SEC tournament, I guess.
But I guess where do we think Florida would fit into the Big East? If we can segue there a little bit.
Well, let's see. I'd put them probably in the middle. Somewhere right in the middle of the Big East. I would.
Eight or nine?
Yeah.
Because there's 16 teams in that conference.
Well,
they'd have a tough time winning in some of those places.
I think they do okay. I mean, I think they're still like maybe six. I think they're definitely the top half of that conference. I think teams like I said, Providence, Cincinnati, teams like that could be beat by them, so...
I mean, they lost to Syracuse on neutral site earlier this year, but I think they were kind of lucky to keep that game as close as they did. So.
Florida was lucky to keep
it? Yes.
I mean, you just saw South Florida knock off Marquette, who was unbeaten in the Big East the other night.
Go Bulls,
so,
by the way.
Let's go Bulls.
Phil's undying love for the city of Tampa.
I don't like I think Marquette could go on a slide here. I don't know. I love Drell McNeil, but I don't really like the rest of their team, and I think they could – once they start playing the big dogs, who they haven't played yet in that conference, I think they're going to slide.
Played one. USF took them down.
So. While we're talking about basketball, did you guys happen to see Blake Griffin's ridiculous dunk today?
No.
YouTube it. It was unbelievable.
Against who?
I forget who it was. It was unreal, though. He took off from like the foul line. Just like went over two people.
I think he's the first overall pick next year.
He's great.
No. Yeah,
not Tyler Hansbrough.
not Tyler.
Not your North Carolina Tar Heels.
I don't know.
What do you think?
I haven't really thought of it enough.
It depends who's picking and what they need, but I mean, he's a great league.
Who's in
the best of the big guys?
Who's in the conversation?
I mean, Hansbrough is anybody gonna make that?
Hansbrough will go in the first round, so I think we can
make Clay this.
Absolutely, I think it's Blake Griffin for sure right now.
All right, well, I think that just about wraps it up here. We've been rambling about the college sports scene here for a little while. We should be back Friday with another sports cast, so keep an eye out for that. Send any feedback to sports@alligator.org or leave a comment on our blog, and we'll see you next time.